Max Supermax comes through with the victory in front of the rabid Dutch crowd, right? The Orange Army.
Yeah, Mercedes found out the hard way. You got to pay the max tax if you want to win.
Yeah, and the Orange Army was misbehaving.
Oh, yeah.
In qualifying. They were on much better behavior on Sunday, thankfully.
But yes.
Saturday was a disaster.
By the grace of God, they were better behaved.
Yeah. Let's get into the Dutch Grand Recap.
Fucking Raikkonen. What a fucking idiot.
Come on, get that McLaren out of here. This guy is a fucking joke.
Five laps remaining, so we need to keep this pace up.
Hey man, don't talk to me through the corners. And he just went off.
Going to retirement. Tony, man, vomiting. Going in, I'm vomiting. I'm going to drive.
Understood. Bump.
This is Purple Sector. Hemwin Raigai on the mics, both back in studio.
This is like a full moon. It's the one time this month that you get both of us in studio.
Yeah, watch out for the werewolves and the zombies tonight because we're both in studio, so crazy shit's going to happen.
Yeah, so it's guaranteed to be a good episode.
Yes, for sure. Here's how to support the show. Thanks for tuning in to Purple Sector. Remember to reach out to the show by pitting in the mail, box, box, box.
Instructions to box.
You can leave a voicemail or shoot a text to 904-8-PURPLE. That's 904-878-7753. You can also slide into our DMs at Purple Sector Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to follow both those accounts as well.
Follow me on Instagram.
You can also get additional content on our YouTube by subscribing to Purple Sector F1 Podcast. Finally, be sure to subscribe to Purple Sector wherever you get your podcasts. Review the show and throw us 5 stars at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. See you all on the track. And what a track it is, Ryan. Zandvoort really is a lot of fun. The bank turns, the wild crowd.
Yeah. And you know what? The weekend's done. Where track limits mentioned once.
Right.
All weekend. Because
thankfully, all these tracks now are throwing gravel into the trouble areas.
Even the resin gravel.
Yeah.
This weekend, the debut.
Yeah. So about that a little bit because I hadn't heard that, but then I heard you telling me about it. So let's tell the people about the resin gravel.
Yeah. So just on the inside of one of the turns, I forget which turn number it was, that normally it would be all gravel just beyond the curb on the inside, on the apex. But they had problems last year with cars grabbing a little too much inside curb and spinning that gravel back onto the track, which can
lead to red flags,
cut tires, make for bad grip, etc. So they came up with a solution where they basically made an extra curb out of just the gravel with resin. So it's like a solid gravel pit. Think about it that way.
Right.
So like there's no grip, but you're not going to throw any gravel back on the track.
It's basically like a nice stone shower, you know, when you have the pebbles, like
it
the
doesn't
raised
move.
Pebbles kind of, right, that's what I'm saying, they're set, but it's like the raised pebbles.
Think about a pool deck with like that gravel concrete.
Yeah.
That's what it's like.
So they had the pool deck but no pool. But
yeah.
I heard you were mentioning though that Julian Palmer or one of the guys on the F1 TV broadcast were saying that these guys, if they know it's resin gravel, eventually they'll try and rubber it in and turn it into like track, you know, where they can easily use it.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how that played out. I agreed with him on the pre-race or the pre-weekend show where he was like, look, they're drivers. They're going to try and rubber that shit in and use it as track. It's what drivers do. But I don't think that actually played out that way.
Well, that's good. It brings resin gravel to the table now for
other
tracks to potentially try and stop the track limits bullshit. Because it's no fun.
I think it's unique, though, to...
Yeah, the lap deletions are no fun.
I think it's unique to Zandvoort, though.
They only make it in Zandvoort. Yeah.
Like, okay, you don't want to be grabbing gravel on the inside of an apex on a regular track because there isn't the banking.
Right. So, first things first, before we get into the weekend, the Contracts Recognition Board, the CRB.
Oh, you're going over this again.
Yeah, they came out with their decision. Yeah, I know you touched on it, but Piastri to McLaren. It's this, as we've said, has been the silliest of silly seasons, and I can't wait to see what else is happening. There's more news that we'll get into. Next week, we're going to do a huge mailbox and the other news, and we'll touch on the other rumors and sort of gamesmanship going on in the silly season.
I mean, do you think there's going to be any more mega surprises? Like, this, just hypothetically speaking, if Gasly went to Alpine and Mick went to... What are Mick's options?
Here's what... So, Mick apparently, like, AlphaTauri could be an option if...
Yeah,
Colton Herta,
okay.
Spoiler
so
alert.
Let's
you
just,
know,
let's
like,
just
there
say,
are options for him.
Let's just
because
say...
Because he's out... I think he recently left the Ferrari Driver Academy. So, I think the writing's almost on the wall that Mick is probably... out unless someone else gets him. Like Ferrari, I think, is almost done with him somehow.
I think
right?
someone else is going to take a gamble on him. Not even a gamble. He's shown pace in the last 4 or 5 weekends.
Yes.
But let's just say Gasly goes to Alpine, Mick goes to AlphaTauri, and who would get the last seat of Williams?
So the
point
only,
is, do you think there's any bombshells left in this silly season?
A bombshell, in my opinion, would be that Danny Ricks finds a drive for next year.
Yes.
That would be a bombshell.
Yes. That would be a bombshell.
Because he was horrific this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, he's bad. He's been bad for
so
2 years now.
He was so bad.
I love Danny Ric. His personality is fun. His driving has not been fun the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, Danny Ric is a favorite of the show, and I think a favorite of most Formula One fans. It's only the odd, random person who tells us they don't like Danny Ric. Like, people who don't follow Formula One but watch Drive to Survive DTS. We've had, like, one person say, like, I don't like Danny Ric. I'm like, how can you not?
Let's address this right now, because I was going to save this for a news episode or something else later this week. Did you see the clip with the audio of him and I believe it was him and Checo walking on the grid? There was a cameraman following them, and he was picking up the audio of their conversation, and Danny Ric clearly says, take a year off. He's talking to Checo, and he's discussing how he plans on taking a year off.
Oh, really?
Which means, I'm sorry, Danny Ric, you're done if you take a year off.
No. You aren't. You haven't left a good taste in all the Formula One teams' mouths. So what is a year off going to do?
His driving's been bad, and he's been grossly overpaid.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a really bad combination.
Right. I think, like you mentioned, the only way is if he agrees to go to a team like on the cheap or almost be a paid driver,
well,
just
now,
to stay relevant. You know what I mean?
The rumors are picking up that he's looking for a test driver role, which, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But that, to me, would be the biggest bombshell if Danny Ric finds a drive next year.
Do you think he would take or settle for, like, a seated Williams?
Yes.
I mean, literally the back of the grid. He would take that?
Yes, yes.
Oh, give me, do you have the conspiracy theory drop on your board?
Yeah, of course I do.
Hang on,
let me find it here.
This is a bold theory for me.
Let me find it here. The conspiracy theory, I know it's here somewhere. There's so many drops now because we've done so much.
We've got the best drops. We've
pulled so much good stuff. So now I have to try and find, I think it's here.
Worth the wait.
So sultry.
So it's very easy to speculate about what Danny Ric might do, okay? And he's been very vocal this past week about how he just wants Formula One. He has been saying, hey, if I'm going to do any racing, it's going to be F1. I have noticed, I've picked up on this, Dale Earnhardt Jr., multiple times in the last 3-4 weeks, has been wearing the Daniel Ricciardo NASCAR-style shirts that Ricciardo sells.
His actual shirts.
Yes.
His, like, $100 t-shirts on his website.
Yes. He's been rocking those a few times in videos on his Instagram, on Dale Jr.'s Instagram.
Really?
Right? So I noticed another one a couple days ago. I'm wondering if he is tickling a NASCAR seat.
Danny Ric would be a beast in NASCAR just as a personality. He'd
be
awesome.
Why else would Dale Jr. be wearing so many Daniel Ricciardo NASCAR shirts?
No, that makes a lot of sense.
I feel like there's something there.
I mean, I think Danny Ric, if he doesn't have the speed, he obviously doesn't have the speed in the McLaren.
He has no speed.
He is very well suited for NASCAR or supercars in Australia, right?
And he loves America.
Yeah, so I could easily see him jumping into NASCAR. We just saw Kimi Raikkonen do it, had a blast. I could see Danny Ric doing that.
Yeah, so that's a fun little conspiracy theory for the listeners
to
chew on.
I like it. I didn't realize. That's more than a conspiracy theory if you've got Dale Jr. rocking Danny Rick's $100 t-shirts, man.
I've connected the dots. We have a bulletin board here in studio. I have mugshots of people.
Yeah, we have the twine.
People.
We have the push pins.
I've been connecting.
We have the pictures. We have everything. It's like it's like the FBI trying to put together the mafia family, you know?
Yeah.
We're trying to put together Danny Rick's next move.
Yep.
Let's get back on track, Ryan. We have to do another drop.
Helmut on helmets.
I didn't even know there were special helmets this weekend.
Max Verstappen wore a Jos Verstappen throwback helmet to honor his father at the Dutch Grand Prix.
Did he not wear that last year, or was it a different one?
I don't know, but it's Jos's helmet design where it's basically the Dutch flag. And then I think maybe Jos was the pioneer of this. It had on the back his, I think, a J and a V kind of thing on the back. But I thought it was a nice touch. His father had COVID and then tested negative on Sunday, but I think stayed away because he doesn't want to risk screwing up his son's
domination.
That's
right. He couldn't go to the ceremony for Max getting knighted by the Dutch royalty on Wednesday or whatever.
And he didn't show up for the race, even though he tested negative apparently on Sunday.
Right. So,
but I like the helmet. It was Dutch flag, which is interesting. There's no orange in the flag. It's red, white, and blue.
That's the Dutch flag.
Right. But orange is like the official color, you know? L'orange.
It's not. It's for Willem the Orange or whatever. It's confusing. I don't know my Dutch history at all.
I like on the helmet, I mean, it's nothing spectacular. It's kind of back in the day, guys, for the most part, would just do their nation's flag as their helmet, you know? Mm-hmm. But I like the sort of the tip of the helmet that Max gave his father at the Dutch Grand Prix and brought it home to victory.
I think you're right, by the way, that it was new this year because Max,
last year he just is the orange lion. Right?
Yeah, but Max had a funny line after the race regarding his dad's helmet design, saying, "Yeah, I finally got a win."
Yeah, got him.
Just casually shitting on his dad while his dad's not there.
Yeah, that's a good bit.
Gotta love dad jokes.
Let's move on to qualifying, Rye Guy. Go fast day. And here's, again, we've been shitting on Danny Rick. We love Danny Rick, but we've taken the gloves off now, right? There's no more babying Danny Rick anymore.
This is the third time this season that he hasn't made it out of Q1.
How about this? His gap to Lando Norris in Q1 was 0.525. More than half a second he was behind Lando Norris's time in Q1, and Danny Rick was eliminated. Your Q1 and Duns, Valtteri Bottas, who's been struggling of late, Alpha as a whole has been, Kevin Magnussen, Danny Rick, more than half a second behind his teammate, Seb Vettel, and Nick Latifi pulling up the rear, as he often does. Those were your Q1 and Duns.
Yep.
And this is Ricciardo's third time missing Q2 this year.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. So fall from grace. Unbelievable.
Danny Rick's average qualifying position so far this season has been like 12th.
It's been horrific, yeah.
If you round the number, it's 12.
Lando Norris is the
Lando's
only guy
is eighth.
Yeah, Lando Norris is the only guy with a podium outside of the big three.
Yes.
Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari.
Yeah, it just gets worse with Daniel Ric all the time.
Yep, and Latifi, in his final flying lap in Q1, had this awkward
this
radio.
This was weird radio.
Okay, Nicky, we need to abort the lap. Abort the lap.
Are you sure? The message is gone.
Keep pushing.
You sure?
Cool the car, bring it in. I'm sorry, mate.
Oh, fuck.
I'm sorry. Keep it clean. I'm sorry. Box now.
It's funny.
How can you drive with that kind of message?
It's so funny when the race engineer has such indecision. It sounds like you cut it there, but you can hear the engine, so you know it doesn't.
I always edit for time. But
did you edit when he goes, keep pushing, and then immediately goes, sorry, cool it down?
To be fair, there's like a 2 or 3 second gap in between them. But if you're watching Latifi's onboard, he's literally, with every breath of his race engineer, he's either gunning it or lifting, and he's trying to put up a flyer.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just awkward stuff.
And I don't know.
Latifi.
I don't think we heard ultimately what the reason was for why they needed to abort the lap. Maybe it was overheating.
Yeah, because the way he's saying it, it sounds like there's some sort of issue. He's saying cool it down.
Yeah, he was getting a message on the wheel or the screen saying
there
something.
Was an error message of some sort.
But they were like, no, you got to box the car. No, push. No, come back. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So then the Orange Army decide to be stupid.
A red flag has been thrown. We're not exactly sure why at the moment. Some idiot's thrown a flare onto the track. Congratulations, guys. I mean, that's just stupid, isn't it? It's utter idiocy.
Yeah, even the Sky guys were demolishing the fans for that, and they were saying, yeah, they found him. They dragged him out of here.
Yeah, Buxton went disappointed dad on him, right? That was a dad voice speaking right there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not angry.
That's just stupid.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, which is the worst. So, yeah, mayhem going on there in Q2. You had a flare on the track from the Orange Army. You had pigeons all over the side of the track.
Yeah.
So during the red flag, you had marshals running around chasing pigeons away. And we got this nugget, Ryan. Karun Chandhok got on the broadcast with Sky and basically said, yeah, I'm terrified of birds. So he has ornithophobia, Karun Chandhok.
I didn't know that. I did not listen to the Sky broadcast for quality, so you'll have to fill me in. He's scared of birds.
He said, I'm terrified of birds. And I could see why. He's a smaller guy.
Ornithophobia, you said?
Yeah. If I was that small, I'd probably be worried that a big enough bird could carry me away. Yeah.
Isn't everyone kind of scared of birds?
Certain birds. Like, not pigeons. Pigeons don't scare me. Only when you don't expect them to be there and they go...
Yeah. But I mean, no one has interactions with birds on a regular, like face-to-face. You know what I mean?
No, we don't have conversations
so
with
when you
birds,
do... So. It's typically terrifying you.
Yeah, so,
startling you.
Well, yeah, startling, but I'm not terrified of birds the way that Karun Chandhok is.
Yeah.
So Q2 Rye Guy, your Q2 cuties, Pierre Gasly, Esteban Ocon, Fernando Alonso, Zhou Guanyu Zhou, and Alex Albon. So some new faces in Q3. We had Lance Stroll, Mick Schumacher, and Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah. Vettel not making it out of Q1 was a travesty because the Aston was quick. The Aston Martin was quick here.
Yeah, I think he made a mistake on his final flying lap, right?
He did. He ran off in the gravel trap.
Gravel.
Yeah. But and that was like right at the end of the lap too in sector 3. And it ruined my bold prediction of both Aston Martins getting out of Q1. It's been since Miami still.
Yeah.
They have not gotten both Aston Martins out of Q1. It's unbelievable. How bad they are on Saturdays.
Yeah, it's been forever, but Sundays they just find a way to make up positions because they're starting way further back than they probably should be.
Yes.
So Q3, Ryan, was a gem. We had an epic battle for pole. You had just the Ferraris and Max duking it out.
Plus some really fresh faces in Q3, generally speaking.
Yeah,
Tsunoda, Mick.
Yeah, Q3 was a lot of fun. Your Q3 sweeties ended up being front row, Max Verstappen on pole next to Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz next to Lewis Hamilton, Checo Perez next to George Russell, Lando Norris next to Mick Schumacher, Yuki Tsunoda next to Lance Stroll.
Yeah.
So yeah, some new fresh faces there in Q3, which we always appreciate.
Yeah, and you had the Perez off, which... may or may not have hindered.
Yeah, that's right.
He Mercedes' had the, ability to get further up.
Yeah,
onto
he spun out right at the end.
First row potentially. I don't think Mercedes.
So
had pole
yeah,
pace.
That was definitely some bullshit in my opinion. When Toto Wolff after Q3 was like, we were a tenth up in the first sector. It's like, but that's how the sectors work,
they,
right?
They weren't though.
Yeah, even if they were, you know, they were probably going to lose time in the other sectors. There's no way that they were going to get pole. Based on the time that Charles
highly
and,
unlikely.
And Max were
I'll never
up.
Completely
yeah,
roll
yeah,
it out.
True, but. You can never say never, but I think that was him just trying to motivate his guys.
I think that's the story of the weekend is Mercedes is just right there. They still don't have the supreme pace to win like they did on Sunday here. They didn't have it.
Yeah.
And just on Saturday, they also didn't have it.
Yeah.
But they're right there. They just need a little bit of luck to fall their way, and they are definitely getting
a
win.
Closest they've ever been, I'd say, in this race to winning one.
Oh,
race.
Absolutely. And by the way, I said this ages ago, however many episodes ago, Moon. Mark your calendar for Singapore. That is going to be their best shot at getting it.
I like that. Calling your shot. I can't wait for your bold prediction of Mercedes win in Singapore.
I'm telling you, Singapore is where it's going to go down. If they're going to do it, it's going to be at Singapore.
Yeah. So the pre-race didn't have as much excitement because we didn't have Martin Brundle this race weekend. But We got Nico Rosberg in his den in Monaco.
He looked like shit.
Yeah, you thought so? I thought he looked
all
right.
Dude, when they first pulled him up on screen, okay, he was like, first of all, the room is really dark. His lighting sucks. For a guy who's a YouTuber now, his lighting was terrible. And he was all, and his hair was all disheveled.
Well, he apparently always goes and has a coffee and runs into Flavio Briatore. So maybe,
right.
Maybe Flavio was Irishing up his coffee.
You didn't notice how sweaty his face
he
was?
He did look a little sweaty, but I thought he looked sweaty. All right. Because he has kind of that windswept hair, sweaty hair. Yeah.
Well, he does live in Monaco, so he probably came straight from the beach, but he was Nico Swetsberg.
So the biggest celebrity on the grid, Ryan, was the bassist from Coldplay, because he had Ted Kravitz basically, you know, bowing at the guy's feet.
Ted wanted to have sex with him.
Yeah, Ted's talking about how he went to concerts and he how Vettels like, go into a concert in Europe when they do their tour.
It was like, that's probably the last thing a musician wants to hear when he's out doing his own thing. Like, he's like, oh, I'm finally going to get a break from tour. I'm going to go to the F1 race. I'll be on the grid. I'm going to meet all my mates, the drivers. It's going to be great. Then he runs into Ted, and Ted's like a giddy schoolboy. He's like,
yeah.
Hey, I was at your show last week. It was sick.
Yeah, he should have been like, hey, can I see your pass? Are you allowed back here? Ted Kravitz.
I mean,
if that
God,
is your real name.
Let the guy just ask him F1 questions.
Yeah. I did like the anthem run, a jazzy little anthem number. Some jazzy beats to it.
And I forget the chick's name, Floor Janssen or something like that?
Yeah, Floor something. It wasn't Floor Von Tenda, one of our frequent mailbox box submitters.
We love Floor, though. Very loyal listener.
So I didn't notice this, but I guess you saw. Verstappen was standing away from all the other drivers. Like, how do you mean? I thought they had mandated spots where they had to stand for the anthem.
They normally have like that red carpet that goes across the track with
they have
with
like markers for where everyone has to stand.
Yeah, there's like a there's a carpet that goes widthwise across the track. They all stand there, right? So Max was standing like 10 yards in front of them, right in front of the music act.
Really? They're making him stand on a pedestal for his home race.
Which I'm not a fan of. I think you put him back with the rest of the drivers. I don't like this pageantry for a sole driver's home race. He gets like special treatment. Fuck that.
Yeah, they're really trying to amp up the Orange Army.
This is the second year we've been to Zandvoort. Right. Like, it's we've beaten that
history,
horse
yeah.
to death.
Yeah, for
oh,
sure.
Hey, do you know Max is Dutch?
Yeah, hey, guys. Newsflash.
Hey.
Breaking news that Max, guess what nationality Max Verstappen is? He's Dutch.
He's Dutch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In case his helmet didn't let you know.
Yeah, the Orange Army and the flares
orange,
on track didn't
the,
let you
the
know.
The orange fucking flares at every track he goes to in continental Europe.
Yeah. So the good news for viewers of the Sky broadcast, Rye Guy, we had Jensen Button in the booth.
Button's a gem.
Breath of fresh air. Yeah.
Button is a gem. Love that guy. Great commentary.
He is fantastic. Why don't we grid up and get into everything that Jensen Button saw from the booth. Seventy-two laps around Zandvoort. Rye Guy, Max Verstappen, the hometown hero, starting on pole. Pretty clean start. There were a lot of guys on soft tires. Only like four or five guys, I think, ended up starting on mediums.
Both Mercs.
Yeah, because they were going for the one stopper.
We have to talk real quick about Lewis Hamilton and opening laps this season. The guy is making contact with people all the time now. He did it again this weekend.
Yeah.
He hit Carlos Sainz.
Yeah, yeah.
And he almost spun his own car doing it. He had a fuckload of oversteer as a result.
Yeah, I think he's grasping, you know?
He squeezed Alonso last race in Spa. He's hit Magnussen, hit Magnussen.
Couple times he and Magnussen.
Him and Magnussen have come together two or three times this season. He's racing really desperate, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Because he knows that the opening lap is crucial to manufacturing a win.
They need track position in that Merc.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they don't, though. Mercedes emphasizes track position way too much. They have a hangover from the old regs, in my opinion. But we'll get to that later.
So the interesting thing early on lap two, you had Kevin Magnussen decide to go rally racing. He looked like when you
play. That was a weird, sand builds up on the track from the dunes and the wind. And that's what happened. I was watching Julian Palmer's analysis of the opening lap on F1 TV, and he showed exactly that same corner where Magnussen got loose. Alonso did as well. They had a sick overhead shot. You could see anyone who went wide there, Moot, you saw the sand like kicking up off the pavement.
He looked like, if you ever race online in any racing game, like the guys who just don't hit the brakes and just go flying past the corner and bang into the wall. That was what Kevin Magnussen looked like on lap two.
Yeah, Magnussen's kind of had a sloppy second half of the year, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's opened the door for Mick to prove himself, you know? He was really paddling Mick at the start of the season.
Yes.
And then, Ryan,
yes, he was.
Once the pit stops began, the sloppiness started. A lot of teams were having awful pit stops. Ferrari and Haas particularly were bad in pit stops. And Sainz had an awful pit stop. And the team left.
His team had an awful pit stop.
Yeah. And the team had the backup wheel gun and they like left it. And this pit road seems
narrow,
very tight.
It's crazy. I think that's why, outside of Ferrari's issue with only bringing three tires out, the rest of the pit stop issues, like it's very cramped in the pit lane here.
It's a cramped pit lane. It looked like every guy had to like really turn hard to get out of the pit box without hitting the other pit or the cables in front of them.
There's a reason why the pit lane speed limit here is 60 kilometers per hour versus, I believe it's 80 at other tracks, where the pit lane's bigger because it's so cramped.
Yeah, I even think I saw on one of Leclerc's pit stops, he already had his tires, his wheels turned all the way left for when they dropped him so he could wrench his way out of there. You know?
And he still hit the gun.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm talking about Leclerc did that, but Perez hit the gun with both wheels and bounced in the air with his rear tire going over it.
Yes.
It's a big 18-inch wheel.
It was a shit show in the pit lane this weekend for most teams.
Yeah. So, so the Ferrari pit stop, Will Buxton was just demolishing Ferrari over the bad pit stop.
Amateur hour. Absolute amateur hour.
It's
so bad,
it's
Will.
It's baffling how they continue to make these basic errors week in, week out, and they insist they don't need to change anything. They do. It's obvious.
Well, if it's not strategy, it's pit stops. And if it's not none of them, then the drivers sometimes make the mistakes. But it's just every weekend things are going wrong.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear
Ferrari.
I'm happy to hear Will Buxton address Ferrari's arrogance in that, where he's like, they insist that nothing needs to be changed. They're still doing that.
Yeah, and when they... So Mattia Binotto was the guy that Sky had on the horn for this race. And after that, they talked to him. He just said, it's a mess. That was a mess.
He finally gave up.
He gave in finally. And then Sainz, when he was in the middle of that bad pit stop.
Oh, my God.
Dude, he was waiting there for 12 seconds.
It was so bad.
It was 10 or 12, whatever it was. It was a lifetime.
Yeah, it was just really... really bad.
How do you not just get your heart ripped out racing for that team? Because even if you do everything right, they find a way to take it away from you every weekend.
Yeah, it's become wild now with everyone shitting on Ferrari. Like Ferrari is the new meme in Formula One.
Not the new meme.
They've been a meme for a while, but especially this year because they have a car that should be winning races. Yeah.
Yes, they have a very quick car.
Even Ryan, I sent you ESPN F1 posted after the pit stop. They showed, you know, here was how long Carlos Sainz's pit stop was. Here was how long Checo Perez's pit stop was, which was a regular pit stop. And their caption under the post on Instagram was just Ferrari, period. Like, with Checo's, like, Sainz's, like, 20-second pit stop. And even ESPN F1, who have the rights to Formula One in the U.S., are memeing Ferrari.
Yeah, because you have no other choice. You have to address the elephant in the room. Ferrari is just a catastrophe of an organization as far as the F1 team is concerned.
Yeah, and Julian Palmer then was busting Ferrari's balls again because usually they're on to plan F, plan J,
plan G,
plan Beta, plan Zeta. They're using all sorts of alphabets, but Palmer was busting their chops because they actually said plan A at some point.
Yeah.
Unbelievably, Ferrari on plan A. Never seen that before this season.
That is such a good burn.
I know.
Ferrari on plan A.
Yeah, and whatever plan A was, it doesn't matter what the letter is. Whatever the plan is a bad one.
It typically doesn't work out for them, yeah. It doesn't matter what plan they use. I can't believe they come up with that many plans and still can't find the right one.
They can't. I mean, how could they have so many plans?
Yeah, I think they're probably overplanning themselves to death, you know?
Yeah.
So we were treated, Ryan. This race, didn't it feel like we were in a time capsule almost? This felt like last season.
Yes.
You had Checo Perez battling Lewis Hamilton. You had Max Verstappen being stalked by the Mercedes.
It felt very 2021. Same story where it's both Mercs trying to throw Verstappen off of his game.
Yeah. So you had Hamilton and Perez in a nice dogfight. Hamilton gets Perez on lap 36. Vettel comes out of the pits at the same exact time right in front of Lewis. So once Lewis gets past Checo and you think he's going to pull away, you have Vettel trundling out of the pits and screwing it up.
He brings Perez right back into the equation.
Yeah, and Ted Kravitz had a great reaction to talking about plan A.
That was great stuff, wasn't it? That was plan OMG with Lewis and Checo Perez.
I love that. Plan OMG.
Ted has such dad energy. He's saying it like he just discovered what OMG means like last week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean,
like he stole his daughter's phone and he saw she was using OMG.
Yeah, he just saw a text. He was like, he probably doesn't even know what it means.
He was like, honey, what does OMG mean?
He just thinks it's what the kids say while he wears his cargo shorts.
Yes.
And his microphone pack, you know? Yeah, so that was, I mean, this was a flashback race. You had Ferrari fucking themselves, which isn't a flashback. But then you had the two Mercs stalking Max Verstappen while Checo was trying to hold up Hamilton.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from this race is regardless of who you were rooting for, of course, Purple Sector, very unbiased podcast, but regardless of who you were rooting for, whether it was...
We root for Formula One, and it delivers.
We root for the culture. Yeah. We're about the culture.
We root for entertainment, and Plan OMG has been brought this season.
Yes, but that being said, whether you were rooting for Max or Red Bull or Mercedes and Lewis and George, tell me you didn't appreciate the dynamic strategy element to the end of this race. Like,
yeah,
it was such a game of chess between Mercedes, Red Bull, even Ferrari at times at the end.
This race was set up that it was going to be an awesome finish no matter what happened. Even if we didn't have any of this, you had Max trying to do a two-stopper, being chased down by the Mercedes on the one-stop, who were going to be on hard tires in the zone, pressing him hard, maybe getting around him. And then when we did have, you know, virtual safety car incidents, it shook the bingo hopper up even more for another wild outcome. So we were going to be treated to a good race regardless of what happened.
Yes, and it was a weird, wild finish. A lot of controversy, unnecessary controversy, in my opinion.
Fake controversy, if you ask me. So the real controversy, Ryan, as we mentioned, the Mercs on the one stop. This was so vintage, right? Mercedes coming up with the good strategy. They were the only ones going for the one stop.
Julian Palmer brought up a great point that could can kind of just like silence a lot of the, you know, conspiracy theories about anything that happened outside of Mercedes' strategy. He basically said, when you go for a one stopper,
right, it has to work out. There's one outcome that works for you.
Yeah. Perfectly.
If there are any virtual safety cars or safety cars, your one stopper gets boned. Right?
If you don't make the right move when that opportunity comes.
If it doesn't
happen
when you're making your one stop.
Yes, it's fucked. So Mercedes was always going to have to deal with that.
Right. That's the gamble. If you go for the one stopper, you need a totally clean race for
and
it
here,
to work.
Here's another thing that enough people aren't talking about, in my opinion, is Mercedes didn't split either guy at all throughout the race until the end when George made up his own mind. But both cars were on the same strategy the entire time.
Yeah, I think Russell pitted like two laps after Hamilton for the one stop they did. They were on the same strategy until the end.
Exactly. Not until the end when George got on the radio and said, hey, I'm going to be fucked if I stay on these mediums.
Right, and he was correct. But let's talk about the fake conspiracy theory, if you ask me. On lap 45, Yuki Tsunoda pulls off to the side. He's on the radio saying one of his wheels wasn't fitted. It looks like he's done, and we're going to have either a red flag or a full safety car to get his car off the track.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, he gets going again.
Well, they get on the radio. He says, I have an unfit wheel. It's not fitted to the car.
Right.
He thinks he has a wheel that's loose from his pit stop. He stops the car. I'm assuming the team has sensors to be able to tell if all the wheels are actually on or not or whatever. They say, no, you're good. The wheels are on.
Then they said it was a differential issue or something.
I'll get into that. So he comes. They tell him to box again just in case. And they give him a fresh set of tires.
And they have to redo his seatbelt because I think he was already undoing his seatbelt because he thought he was going to get out of the car.
Yes, he thought he was DNF'd. So he loosened his belts. He drove back slowly, did his best to not admit over the radio that he loosened his belts.
Right.
Because that's a big no-no.
He's driving around with loose-ass seatbelts.
Yeah, it's a big no-no, dude. So goes back to the pits. They get him new tires. They are also, it looks like they're giving him a hand job in the cockpit.
Yeah, that was awesome. Two mechanics just reaching into his crotch.
Just going to town on Yuki.
Yeah.
They're tightening his belts
again. It was basically
again.
Like, what is the late night Showtime or what? Skinemax. It was like a Skinemax, a gay Skinemax show.
Formula Skin.
Yeah.
Right. So they were tightening his belts, and then they put fresh tires on, and he goes. Okay. Turns out he had a issue with his rear differential, right? That is the, if you're not familiar with that, that is the component in the back of a car in between, it's basically dead center on the rear axle. Its job is to make sure that when you're turning, both wheels are spinning independently of each other.
Yeah.
Different speeds, right? It was broken. So when he was driving straight, his left tire versus his left.
That's why he thought it was a tire issue. Because
exactly.
He's feeling like one tire is pulling and the other isn't. And he's interpreting that as a loose wheel.
Yes, because a differential is not supposed to do that when you're driving straight. When you're turning, the inside wheel turns slower than your outside wheel.
Right.
So when he's just driving straight, because the differential is broken, one of his rear tires is spinning faster than the other one. So his car is crabbing.
Right.
It's crabbing as a result.
Crab walking down the track.
Which will feel like
crabs
a loose...
Crabs on the beach in Zandvoort.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Which will feel like a wheel slipping off of the car because one side of the car is randomly pulling it away. And that's
right,
why...
Right, like when you drive through a puddle and it's kind of pulling you because that wheel is no longer getting traction
exactly.
And spinning on the ground.
Different wheel speeds, essentially. Yes. So that's the root of the issue. And by the way, this type of thing is rare. Like, I can't remember the last time that a guy had his rear diff break slightly like that. I don't think it's... I can remember when it's happened.
Yeah. So they they do the Skinemax movie with the seatbelt. They put on new tires. They send him back out, and he immediately has to pull back over because I guess they realize the diff is completely busted, right?
Well, as he gets to the end of the pit lane, he's saying... I believe he mentioned something's wrong with the diff or the diff's broken. He goes... They say, stop the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's my problem with the conspiracy theories. Why? Why would, if you're positing that Red Bull is using their sister team.
They're saying, hey, Mercedes is stalking us. You need to manufacture something. Why would they do it that stupidly? Wouldn't they just stop the car now?
Yeah. No, I agree. Why would they do something so brazen? Like if that was truly them rigging a race, that would have been extremely obvious, first of all. Second of all, why would they rig the race? They're dominating the championship.
They're cakewalking to both titles.
They're moonwalking to the finish line of this season. Max is going to wrap up the driver's title in like the next three races.
Yeah. As much as I love Ted Kravitz, he is the king of fanning the conspiracy theory flames on this, the British bias. Like
Yeah, I agree. I think that...
It is not... It's just... This is what happens in the heat of battle. It was this AlphaTauri desperately trying to bring Yuki home because he qualified so well.
I know. A lot of people
just look like dumbos.
A lot of people are saying, like, but why would AlphaTauri do that? Because they're still a fucking racing team. Like, they're still trying the hardest they can.
They want to classify their driver.
To get their fucking car to go to the finish line.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is so perplexing in this situation. So too much emotion involved with... Mercedes potentially getting a win, in my opinion, is what's going on here.
We're hyper-analyzing. I mean, we're going to do it. We love doing it. But we're hyper-analyzing it and giving too much credit to these teams in the heat of battle. That how would that information even be transferred? Is there some secret button on the Red Bull pit wall and he hits up French Toast? And Christian Horner's like, all right, plan OMG right now.
That was great stuff, wasn't it? That was plan OMG with Lewis and, like, and Checo Perez.
Do you think Horner is saying, all right, AlphaTauri, it's time for plan OMG. We need to manufacture a VSC.
Right. I'm not saying that there isn't wiggle room for something like that, right? For
teams. It can happen.
Right?
Usually it looks even stupider, like Michael Schumacher going into the wall in Monaco or Fernando Alonso going into the wall, you know? Like.
Right. There is absolutely a gamesmanship element to F1, okay? The same reason why last year we had situations where when Lewis and Mercedes and Toto were, you know, desperately trying to chase down Max in the championship towards the end of that season, right? And we had weekends where Mercedes would randomly tell all the Mercedes customer teams, yeah, we have an engine mapping issue. You know, most of you are going to have to take new engines this weekend. Penalties or not, that's gamesmanship. Stuff like that happens. Red Bull is also capable of that with their sister teams. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not saying that's not possible. This was not one of those situations. Did you look at the standings going into this weekend? Take a look at the standings and then tell me that a bunch of people put their heads together between Red Bull and AlphaTauri and said, hey, we're going to fuck up Yuki's race this weekend.
Jos Verstappen could wear that tribute helmet that Max wore this weekend for the rest of the season and win the championship for Max.
Yes.
Like, it's in the bag. I'm sorry.
To me, the conspiracy
theory, it's a question of how soon. Can he clinch it in Singapore? I think that is like best case scenario, maybe.
No.
Maybe I'm exaggerating.
But definitely Japan or earlier is on the cards.
Yeah, but it will happen soon. But we're still getting great races because think about this. Look at just root for, if you think the season is going to be boring if someone clinches, we are rooting our balls off for a Mercedes win. We're rooting our balls off for one of those, at least one of those oddball races where someone else wins.
I said that in my race preview. I said Mercedes should have a really good chance at stealing a win here this weekend. Yeah, and it was close.
They were getting close with the one stopper.
So I just want to say, because you brought up Ted, right? There was a lot of that from Sky. Like, who's the redhead guy who's in the paddock with Sky?
Who, Anthony Davidson?
No. Older guy.
I'm not sure.
He's always the third wheel between, like...
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
His name always slips my mind. It's like Alistair or something.
Yeah. Sure. Alistair.
Something too. English. Yeah. So he also dropped the conspiracy theory language. Like, he's multiple times
they
on
love
Sky.
Beating that drum. It's the paparazzi. The Brits love the paparazzi stuff. They like to drum up the conspiracy theories, the Daily Mail type
stuff.
But
even Toto was kind of peddling it after the race, too, on a couple things I saw. And Sky wrote an article quoting him about if the title fight was closer, that they would need to look into what happened with
Yuki.
Come on.
Valtteri Bottas then brought us. It's not only
I get
Yuki,
why,
you know what I mean?
I get why Toto's doing it, because he could take a little bit of attention off of Mercedes' strategy woes from this race, because let's be honest.
I wouldn't say woes. They had the good strategy, but like you
said.
No,
they fucked up in
one thing. Well, later. But I'm saying the one-stop strategy, like you said, everything has to align perfectly for a one-stopper to play. Otherwise, you're forced to react, and the one-stopper's out the window.
Yes. So let's move on from the Yuki Tsunoda.
So after Yuki, we get a virtual safety car in lap 48, which triggers Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton to both pit under the VSC on lap 49.
Yep.
So now that one-stop strategy is out the window for Mercedes.
Verstappen retakes the lead.
Right, because Hamilton stops, and they both slot back in the same way with fresher tires. Then on lap 56, you have Valtteri Bottas stop, and now we have more chit going on because Yuki only brought out a virtual safety car. Valtteri Bottas brings out a full safety car.
Hi, I'm Valtteri Bottas.
And you had signs, Ryan, pass Ocon right where Valtteri Bottas was stopped. He was stopped right before the pit exit, basically, right? Right at the end of the straight.
Yeah, a bit dodgy.
A bit dodgy, but the flag was like right at the end, and he didn't get penalized, and now everyone's saying, like, that's ridiculous. I don't know what's going to come of that. Probably nothing, but
I don't
know. Very dodgy. I don't think I can fault him because I don't know that there were any yellow flags on the steering wheels or on the boards. It was only the guy at the end of that straight waving the yellow.
Right. So Julian Palmer had great analysis because he had a nice overhead shot of that whole sequence, right? So Sainz makes the move. He's like maybe 2 feet ahead of Ocon heading into that braking zone, literally 20 yards tops before that yellow flag. If you draw a line straight across the track from where that marshal was waving the yellow, he's getting that move done right before that guy with the yellow flag.
And the yellow flag is on the inside and across from the car he's passing, right?
Right. So that's definitely something for the FIA to chew on, is how are they going to figure out that situation in the future?
Yeah, because, it looked to me like they didn't put it up on the boards or on the wheels yet, you know? Like, I didn't, because I saw
matter,
the replay,
it
wasn't. It
doesn't matter if it's on the wheel, though. The marshals exist for a reason. You're also supposed to be looking.
Oh, for sure. No, I understand what you're saying, but they have those digital means to immediately when you're calling for a yellow flag, like they're telling the marshals to wave a yellow, right? They should be immediately enacting the notifications on the steering wheels and on the boards, you know?
Right. So, I don't know. It was definitely dangerous, though. I mean, those cars are coming in so hot into turn one. Bottas's car is more or less on the apex. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, he was pushing. I mean, he was on the inside, and Sainz was pushing around the outside. And, then we had a full safety car. Max went on to softs. Hamilton and Russell went past him on lap 57. Then you had the safety car pull everyone through the pit lane because of where Bottas's car was.
Right.
And that's when, leading into the pit lane, George Russell gets on the radio, and as you said, he came out and said, even though I'm ahead of Max, he has fresh tires, like, I'm not going to be able to do a restart on anything but softs if I want to hold my position.
Right. Let's rewind just a little bit, okay? Safety car period starts. Max is still in the lead.
He gives up position to both Mercedes.
To me, yeah. when Red Bull and their strategist, Hannah Schmitz, right, willingly pit Max out of the lead onto the soft, it was over.
Over. They made the first Mercedes. Move. Mercedes had to be the first to act with at least one of their guys, right?
Right.
That's where they should have said, Hamilton, come in. I know
they should have double stacked them both on a softs. Basically, the only way Mercedes could have won this race, in my opinion, again, this is my opinion, is on the next lap, right? Max pits on a softs. He relinquishes first. He goes back to, I believe it was third, right?
Right. He went behind both Mercs.
So the next lap, there's traffic in between George and Lewis, and Max is obviously behind George. If George backs up Max as legally as he can without getting a penalty to give Lewis time to box and then himself time to box, and both Mercs are on the soft and Lewis potentially ahead of Max, that's their best shot.
Did you see, too, when George decided he wanted to pit and get on the softs, where he pulled up to the car in front of him and was like, go, let's go.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like, I don't know, man. I this brings up what I was saying in one of my solo apps about Mercedes some weekends gets so focused on like hitting this long shot grand slam at getting the win that they are leaving points on the table, which they just did this weekend too. They surrendered the maximum to Ferrari because of their quest of getting the win.
Yeah, Toto said as much after the race. He was like, yeah, we could have settled for 2-3. We wanted to go for the win. He wants a win.
But they didn't go for the win.
I know. They may have, in the end, made the wrong decisions, but
they didn't do anything. It was a free-for-all. George said, I want sauce. Lewis was like, yeah, oh,
what
fuck.
What if George hadn't asked for sauce? Were they just going to let them both restart in front of him?
Well, this is an interesting situation that Mercedes is in, because George is leading the team in points,
right,
as far as the drivers are concerned. So what would have happened if George says, I want sauce, and they absolutely refuse? They're like, no, we're not doing that.
No, you're going to be the buffer for Lewis from Max on the restart.
We need you to stay in between Lewis and Max. And he's like, you know what I'm saying? So Mercedes, I don't know, they're having an identity crisis in these situations.
Yeah, I agree. Now that they have George Russell there, there's an identity crisis. He's leading, as you mentioned, Hamilton in the championship.
Just this race.
He finishes top five every race but Silverstone.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier this episode that they have a bit of a hangover strategy-wise from the old cars, right? This is new regs. It's more about fresh rubber now than track position.
Yeah.
It is not all about track position like the old cars.
Yeah, because these can fall more closely, the rubber is more important, so, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's play that radio, okay? Now, before you play it, I don't have George's radio, but I saw the transcript, okay? Heading into that lap, Max obviously pits, okay?
Talking about the ending of the safety car?
Yeah, but Max pits onto the softs. The next lap is when Mercedes has choices, okay? So, George, if you read the transcript, Hamilton and Bono don't once discuss pitting for new tires. They are fixated.
They want track position.
They are fixated on track position, okay? Which, to me, that's exactly where it all went away. The ability to win left the discussion right there. George, on the other hand, call it going rogue or whatever you want to call it, he's like, these tires suck. They're going to be cold because we have issues with temp. I need to get off these. I want the softs. He's thinking about himself. There's nothing wrong with that. He wants the softs. He gets them. Now play this Hamilton radio. This is wild.
This is Hamilton on the restart.
Why did you stop George?
Don't know this, I'll let you know.
Yeah, track position. We had a buffer between us, so now we don't have that.
Copy that, Lewis.
It'll be hard to keep that car behind me, guys, now.
Yeah, copy, Lewis, but yeah, let's give it everything.
Oh, I can't believe you guys fucking screwed me, man. I can't tell you, I'm pissed off right now.
Yeah, he lost the best teammate of all time, as he mentions, because Valtteri, they would have just made the pawn in between him and Max. George steps out and says, I want softs, and he gets them and leaves Hamilton out to dry, right?
Well, dude, this is the 15th race of the season. George is leading Hamilton in points.
Right.
It's a different Mercedes now.
Yes.
So
new regs, new Mercedes.
Let me just throw some questions at you, okay? Every scenario that could have played out this way, right? Max pits on us, like... every situation has to involve Max pitting on softs before Merck. Okay? Let's just start there. Max is on softs. He's in third. If George and Lewis pull off a double stack where at least one of them comes out ahead of Max,
they're going to lose some time, but
do they win the race?
It will make a difference. I don't think they would have the pace to win if they're starting behind him on the restart now.
Okay. If they both pit on a softs and they're both behind Max, do they catch Max?
No.
Is there any scenario with the way the end of this race played out where...
No, I don't think. With the safety car, I don't think they would have won this. Even if the only way is if they had pitted for softs before Red Bull and Red Bull had to do it after and give back track position. They're all on softs. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Mercedes would have had to be in front with at least one car. Pitted before Max did for softs before the safety car went through the pit lane.
Yeah,
right?
And I feel like... you know, with all the drama of like what Mercedes did and the whole Yuki conspiracy bullshit... no one's talking about the fact that Red Bull willingly pit out of the lead.
Right. I think back, there are so many races around in recent history where the guys who are obsessed with track position and older tires get got because they don't react or they're not proactive. When you're behind, you have the option more so to be proactive because what do you have to lose? You know.
Right, but I think a bit of what's going on here, like you just said, Mercedes is still like that. They're kind of obsessed with track position, but they don't have that pace margin anymore.
Exactly.
Where they can
they're making decisions thinking we have the fastest car.
They
right?
still think, they still think that they're like in race pace. They're like within a tenth of Max. They're not, and it's clouding their decision making.
No, Max went, even with the car behind him on these power heavy tracks on the straights, the other car can have DRS. They don't make up that much ground on the Red Bull on the straights. If Max doesn't have DRS, I think they even mentioned that one time on Sky. They're like, wow, they're not even making up that much ground with DRS on the Red Bull.
Right. You know? And by the way, Hamilton apparently was in the wrong PU mode or something on the restart. And that's why he was like a wet blanket.
So, before we do the restart, we have to also just quickly mention, because it was raining shit on Ferrari, as always. During that, when the cars went through the pit lane, Sainz pitted, and then he was unsafely released right in front of Alonso and got a 5-second penalty.
Yeah.
And Ocon missed out by like 0.02 of a second or a tenth or something, barely missed out jumping Sainz with that penalty because everyone was so tight. There were only 10, 11 laps left on the restart.
Yeah,
and Sainz had to open up a 5-second gap on everybody.
If you go back and watch that whole sequence, right, of the unsafe release... because that we've talked about it already this episode, that pit lane's so tight that when you're leaving your pit box...
yeah, you're going so slow, you're wrenching the wheel.
You're full lock, and Mood, he's doing the clutch. You're doing the clutch when you're leaving the pit box while you're full lock. So that's what happened was Carlos anti-stalled it.
Yeah, I heard someone say he anti-stalled, yeah.
So it was all on Carlos. He had it, like the timing was good, but then he anti-stalled it, leaving the box.
Yeah, so
and then Alonso just... as you do, you make a blatant case for why it's an unsafe release if you're the guy from behind.
You slam the brakes on.
Yeah. Alonso almost drove straight into him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the guys on F1 TV said, right? Either the strategy is bad,
driver mistakes,
the drivers make mistakes,
or reliability
issues. Reliability sucks. Like, and this was a little bit of everything. You know, the driver made a mistake on this for the unsafe release.
The Venn diagram of Ferrari is just three Ferrari logos, and then in the middle... is a Ferrari logo.
Yeah. So lap 61, Ryan, is the restart, and you were saying that Hamilton was also in the wrong mode.
Apparently he was in the wrong PU mode or something where he was down on power slightly or whatever.
Yeah, because either way...
which compounded the issue.
Yeah, when he decided to gas it, Max was all over him.
It was
pulled alongside him, and at the restart line,
Max lifted
to keep that, because you can't pass before that restart line.
He had such a good jump.
Max was like one wing behind him.
He had such a good jump on Lewis out of the final turn onto the straight that he had to lift to make sure he didn't pass him before the start finish line.
Yeah. And so
it's ridiculous.
Max didn't need DRS or anything, just immediately on that start finish line straight passed him. With a ridiculous timing lift move at the line.
This is what I will ultimately say to some of the people that think there's a conspiracy about Yuki and that Mercedes was on for a 1-2 finish or a 1-3 with Lewis winning, George third, Max getting second, because they both stayed out on mediums. Lewis didn't even podium.
Yeah, he finished fourth. He started going backwards.
He got caught.
Max go right past him. Then his teammate, by the way, in another ridiculous... That battle they had on
Lewis
the straight.
Lewis moved so late.
He was wiggling. Lewis was wiggling. And the sparks were coming from Hamilton's floor, right? They didn't actually touch wing or anything
top.
But George, the reactions from George there were pretty fucking ridiculous, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Because that was centimeters, millimeters.
It was interesting.
Decameters from a double DNF for Mercedes there.
That was the hardest defending Lewis did all race of any car behind him, was on his own teammate. So it's interesting the way things are playing out right now in Mercedes. I think we'll see how the rest of the season goes, man, but it's going to be juicy in my opinion.
Yeah, because Hamilton right now
rip-roaring
mad. He had so much radio just saying, like, you guys fucked me. This is so fucked. Like, you heard it on that restart radio. He was already saying this is bullshit. He was dropping so many expletives.
Oh, he was bitter.
He
only thanked the mechanics on the cooldown lap.
Yeah, that's right. He said, I just want to thank the mechanics for a great job on the pit stops.
He's like, the pit stops were killer.
Yeah. So
if I'm Hamilton, I think I'm not saying he doesn't realize this, but he has to utilize a different set of tools this season. It is not the same Mercedes. They don't have any advantages.
Right. If I were him, like we've said for the Ferrari guys, especially Leclerc, you have to start overriding your pit wall. In some of these instances, right?
Yeah.
If you want to pull out a win or fight for a championship in Leclerc's case.
But I'm also kind of baffled by, at least in the case of Lewis and his side of the garage, like these blind spots with strategy. We shit on Ferrari all the live long day about the mistakes they make strategy-wise, but we got to say the same thing about Mercedes at the end of this race. They fucking blew it.
I think, like you said, I think the best way to put it is that they're strategizing as if they still have the power advantage and they have the quickest car.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, if I'm Lewis, I have to like rewire a little bit of my racing brain.
Yeah.
For these.
Because he's not going to get the same treatment right now. George Russell, as you mentioned, is ahead of him in the championship. You know, this is new regs. This is a new teammate who's actually a fighter compared to Valtteri Bottas, right?
Right, and just speaking about the Mercedes team broadly, if they're going to get a win, it's going to be from punching above their weight. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They're going to have to manufacture a win. They're going to have a track that suits them and manufacture a win with strategy.
Like, in the case of Singapore, let's just fast forward here.
I love how we're running the Singapore
I'm gonna
Grand
break it
Prix
down.
Already.
All right,
yeah.
Look, I'm just going to
break this. This should be in the Singapore Grand Preview, but you're going to run the Singapore race right now in your head.
I'm rubbing my crystal ball right now, okay? I'm caressing it. Here's the deal. Mercedes is going to be wicked quick in a large portion of one lap there, right? Two out of three sectors, but just like any track, there's a decent amount of straights in Singapore. That's where Red Bull will have the pace. So the question is just going to be, can Mercedes find a way to negate that or out-strategize that?
Yeah, that's always the question.
I think they'll do it. I think they will get the win.
I like it. The bold prediction's already out there. You're stamping it. Mercedes wins Singapore.
Their best shot is Singapore for sure.
So your podium, as Ryan mentioned, Max Verstappen, first place, takes home the home win, Max Supermax in front of the Orange Army. Also gets the purple point, maximum points for Max here. George Russell second, Charles Leclerc third, Lewis Hamilton drops down into fourth from the lead at the restart. Carlos Sainz drops down to eighth with that five-second penalty, should have dropped down to ninth, but Ocon barely missed out on tightening the gap to 5 seconds.
Right. Alonso had a ridiculous drive.
Yeah, I was reading an article today.
Who got driver of the day?
I don't know. I was trying to, I didn't look for it. I thought to look for it, but they didn't show it on the broadcast.
It should have been Alonso if it wasn't him.
So I heard Alonso say, I was reading an article today where he said basically, because he ran up into sixth, right? After Sainz got pushed back. And Alonso was basically like, yeah, I did 72 quali laps around that track to pull myself up into sixth.
Max got
it. Was Max. It was because it's the Orange Army. It's in Holland.
Driver of the Day is such a stupid
popularity. It's a popularity contest most of the time. Or whoever races from the back.
Alonso, you know? Alonso made up like eight positions on a track that is hard to overtake on. And the voters gave Driver of the Day to the guy on pole for winning.
Yeah. So let's get into
it. It's a yoke. It's a yoke.
This is a yoke. So the post-race stuff, Ryan, thank God the flare etiquette was much better for the race. They didn't pop them until after the race, even though they said flares were banned. But as we know, the Orange Army is going to keister the flares. They're going to find a way to get them in there. A
lot of butthole flares.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of brown. Some of those orange flares became brown flares.
I'm officially drawing my line in the sand, Moot, okay? I enjoy seeing the sick photos of like
they look great in still photography.
The grandstand just, you know, billowing smoke and Max driving by or whatever. That makes for a sick photo. If I went to a race and I was in a grandstand with all those fucking dopes lighting their goddamn
The smell, the visibility getting jacked up.
I can't see a portion of the race because those cheese dicks are fucking lighting orange smoke flares,
yeah,
I would be so salty.
So I think if we were talking about business opportunities, maybe we'll bring this to Shark Tank, Ryan. We need to start getting flare sniffing dogs because they can't, you know, they can't metal detect those bastards. We're going to have to get some dogs sniffing those flares out of their buttholes.
You're telling me we want sniffing dogs.
We're going to train a fleet of Purple Sector flare sniffing dogs.
Yes, burying their beaks.
Because I can guarantee you, after them throwing it on track, they ruin the fun for everyone. It is going to be banned at every track going forward.
Oh, yeah, it's over.
It's 100%
after this,
banned.
It's over.
Yeah.
Because there's a schedule. Like, you can't delay any session on any given day because
you have broadcasts,
when
you
F1's
have timing
done,
for other sessions.
When F1's done, then it's Porsche Supercup.
Or other series,
or
W
F2,
series.
Or W series, or F3. You can't be dicking around with these butthole flares.
Or Porsche Cup is going to be out there ramming into the barrier.
They're actually more dangerous than the flares.
Yeah. So I thought the cool down room was super insightful, very interesting to hear, right? I liked the guys breaking down.
It was.
Yeah, because they were talking a lot of strategy. They were looking and breaking down some of the film that was playing on the screen behind them.
Right.
I enjoyed the cool down room. The
did
podium.
Hang on, before you go to the podium, did you notice, I love the whole setup they have now where the drivers are chilling, drinking their water.
Yeah.
They got their towels, whatever, and they start showing all the replays from the race, and then they react, and we get to hear it. It's brilliant, okay? Did you notice? They show the replay of when George overtook Lewis on the straight, and you remember how close it was?
Yeah.
Right? And a late move from Hamilton. Max and fucking Charles both go,
yeah, like ooh.
They gasped. They gasped about how late Hamilton's move was. George standing there stone faced.
Yeah. No, I think going back and look, that was such a sick, that's the reaction of these guys. Like that, yeah. The fact that George kept that clean and kept this momentum. Yeah. It was awesome. That was an awesome move that will probably go forgotten, but we're not gonna forget
it
here. I thought that move, him reacting to the wiggle from Lewis, but his reactions to keep that clean were hyper impressive.
Yeah, they all have that in them, though. All these guys have insane, well, I would say 18 out of the 20 drivers on the grid.
Let me guess who.
I would say Latifi would probably have wrecked.
Maybe Lance Stroll.
No, I wouldn't do Lance dirty like that.
Really?
I would say Latifi would have easily wrecked into the back of Hamilton.
He would have just climbed up the back of Hamilton's car.
He would have just crushed his teammate. By the way, can we just do a hypothetical here? What if George and Lewis had wrecked each other in that moment on the straight? Could you imagine?
Toto would have lost
his fallout.
Mind. Oh yeah, Mercedes, Ryan, are going to. I feel like they're going to take second in the constructors. And
they should have it already.
Right, right.
Lewis getting too greedy on the opening lap in Spa and DNFing.
Yeah, that's
when he
right.
came together with Alonso.
Because the gap,
now,
I think, is 30 points or something.
Now, Mercedes most likely just threw away a 2-3 for a 2-4.
Yeah, Mercedes is only 30 points behind Ferrari in the constructors right now.
They should be almost tied with them right now. Basically tied
Correct.
With Ferrari.
Correct. So, can we get to the podium?
Yes.
So, much like the pit lane being super cramped, that podium is miniature.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you saw how tight...
Everything at Zandvoort is tight and twisty banked.
Yeah, you could have taken a golf rangefinder and had the whole podium in your purview. Like, it's so tiny.
Yeah, I don't golf. I don't get that joke, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's just a golf joke. So
it's an optics joke.
What were your thoughts? What the fuck was that graffiti coloring book, like, graphic on the Heineken Star Tube? Yeah.
I'll tell you what it was. It was garbage.
Yeah, I thought it was garbage. It looked like a coloring book. It was white and black lines, and it just looked like a coloring book got you know, pasted onto the Heineken Star Tube.
They could dig up...
What shitty artist drew that?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, ultimately, Moot. They could dig up Pablo Picasso's corpse and bring him back to life.
Yeah.
And say, hey, here's a blank Heineken Star Tube.
Yeah, make this
look make good. A masterpiece.
Make it so the Purple Sector guys won't shit on it.
Yeah. And guess what? We would come in here, would fire at the mics, and we would shit on it.
Yeah.
We are anti-corporate trophies.
Anti-Star Tubes, for sure.
That is a hard line.
Yes. We've very much been on that side, the right side of history when it comes to corporate trophies, trophies.
The Lenovo trophies suck. The Heineken Star trophies suck.
Yeah. Speaking of shitting on things, how about Nico Rosberg in the post-race talking about Ferrari strategy? He said, quote, F2 and F3 teams run better strategies than Ferrari.
Yeah,
oh,
I loved it.
Oh, my God, just buries Ferrari.
It was
that.
a great sharp-pointed dig. Mattia Binotto has responded. He basically said, like, no, everything's fine.
Well, during the race, though, he did say, it's a mess.
Yeah, but typical Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other fun takeaway I had, Ryguy, AlphaTauri.
Have you ever seen a team that is second in the Constructors' Championship take so many body shots from the media?
They're a speed bag for the media.
This would be
they just get speed bagged by everybody.
This would be
they're getting memed by ESPN, F1, Twitter, Instagram accounts.
Everyone
is blasting them. Yeah.
Think of all these fans that are new to F1 and they're like, what do you mean Ferrari sucks?
Yeah, they're like, why would I ever want a Ferrari?
Unbelievably, Ferrari on plan A. Never seen that before this season.
Yeah, they just are getting roasted by everybody. It's something to see. So, Ryan, here's another fun thing. Your boy Yuki Tsunoda, I've noticed that AlphaTauri have basically made a dad hat for him. Did you see the dad hat?
I think it's awesome.
Oh, really?
The leather brim and then
you better buy the fucking Yuki Tsunoda leather brimmed, like, Japanese maple dad hat.
Okay, if there are any of them left in stock, come.
Oh, you think they're sold out?
No, hang on. Come the Black Friday sale, which is when I get my wallet out.
You better be checking that store online for all the
sales. I will buy
it. Yeah.
If it's still available and on sale, come the Black Friday sale, I will fucking get it.
Well, we're going to hold you to that here at Purple Sector. We need you in the Yuki Tsunoda dad hat.
Right. So, let's quickly forget what I forgot what I was going to say now. It was something bigger picture for the season.
Yeah, well, I can run through real quick while you try and gather your thoughts on what you were about to
say. Yeah, go for it.
Constructor standings, you have Red Bull now sitting with 511 points. Ferrari in second with 376, 135 points behind Red Bull now is the gap. Mercedes in third in the Constructors, 346 points, only 30 behind Ferrari. In the drivers, you have Max with 310, 109 points clear of both Charles Leclerc and Checo Perez, who are second and third.
Gotcha. Okay. I remember now. So we were beating this drum a while ago. I think earlier than any chatter I saw on Twitter or Sky Sports or any of those outlets, okay? Or Reddit, okay? Max and the 13-win record. It's fully fucking on.
Oh, yeah.
On.
I've noticed. There are so many articles now about can Max beat the race. We were talking about it like seven races ago.
Dude, I brought that up so long ago, okay? It's fucking on. I mean, he is coming for that record. It is fucking on.
Yeah, right now he looks unstoppable, Max, Supermax. I mean, he's winning from, you know, taking engine penalties and winning races. He's winning these races. He's winning every fucking race. It's the first time... Right, he's won four in a row.
Yes, he finally got that, you know, monkey off his back, four in a row. To me, the only thing that stands in the way of Max breaking the record is reliability.
Red liability.
Sorry. Yeah. If you look at the rest of the tracks, okay, they're predominantly power tracks, more or less, outside of maybe Singapore. But that's it. I mean, it is there for the taking. Max can break some serious records. Max can break some serious records this year, dude. Think about it. If he gets one more win, he ties Lewis's all-time in a season career best with 11.
Yeah.
Think about that. For all the records that Lewis has, Max is about to tie his season win record.
Yeah.
At 11.
It's going to be hard to stop him for the rest of the year, but your bull prediction is already in the books that Mercedes wins in Singapore.
That's their best shot.
Yeah.
Agreed. I give them a 60% chance to win in Singapore.
Love it. That was a great race. What a great season. Thank you all for joining Purple Sector for our Dutch Grand recap.
Can anybody stop Max?
That's the question going forward. Can't wait to see and find out. Singapore, Rye Guy, your nuts are on the line.
Oh, it's big time.
All right, gang. It's a triple header. We got Monza coming this weekend. We're doing our Grand preview for that after this.
The mailbox box is postponed until next week. We're just too jammed.
Yeah, we'll get into it all. See you all on the track.
Purple Sector. Oh, it's purple. Purple.
Three purple sectors.
Three purple sectors.
Yeah, the car is terrible to drive. Very difficult.
I want to change things. I want to stop Mercedes dominating.
Honestly, what are we doing? Racing or pink block?
Okay, Lewis, close that gap as much as you can. It's hammer time.
It's not getting the floor flat.
How did you call that last lap incident? Brainless.
Daniela, a hard-fought fourth place in the end for you.
Hard-fought? Not really. I thought that was boring.
So I think we can call Max Verstappen the baby-faced assassin.
I think we clench our butt cheeks and hope we stay there to the end, Martin.
I'm driving like a grandma. What the f***?
Looks like my wife's driving that car.
Yeah, tell the safety car to slow down.
He's stroking that Ferrari.
I know I'm losing time to Vettel, but I really don't care.
They are racing.
So it's happy hour, basically.
People just simply don't have the balls to stick to what they say.
Mama, what the hell is going on?
A firm boundary position, stay as they are. We'll talk about it after the race.
We are here to race and not to just hang out, so...